CMT seminar. Today we're very pleased to welcome Ajit Sahar. He's currently at Oxford, but he did his PhD in Princeton and then did a postdoc at Harvard. And he's going to talk to us about, I can't see the title of the slide, so
it's if anybody
localization,
a quantum frontier. So when you're ready, please begin.
Yeah. Can you see the slide?
Yes, that's coming through fine.
Yeah. Thank you for the invitation to present my work. Thank you for the introduction. I wanted to first say a bit about my research interests. I've been interested, I work on condensed matter physics and quantum information. And more recently, I've been working on the phenomena of many-body localization and also aspects of electronic and nuclear spins in semiconductors on properties which can be utilized for quantum information processing. So today I will talk to you about a bit about a part of the work that I've done on many-body localization, and I'll also try to give a broad overview of the kinds of questions that I plan to explore in the near future and the connection that I want to build between many-body localization and quantum information. So without much further ado, let me start with my presentation. So, Bose Einstein condensates are probably one of the most well-studied quantum states of matter in the past century. As we all know, it is a state which exhibits quantum coherence over a macroscopic length scale. And that has been one of the biggest cornerstones of quantum condensed matter physics, where we try to understand novel equilibrium states with exotic properties which arise due to the fundamentally quantum nature of the microscopic particles. This has led to the discovery of various interesting kinds of quantum states like high-TC superconductors, topological insulators, and various kinds of magnetic materials, and so on and so forth. These scientific breakthroughs, interestingly, have also led to major technological applications in some of these cases. And in that spirit, that people have started studying the quantum states of electron and nuclear spins in various kinds of solid state materials. So here on the left, to your left, is an example of an NV center in diamond where the electron and the nuclear spins in diamond can be controlled by optically driving the systems. And on the right is an example of a semiconductor heterostructure where a single electron can be trapped by using electrostatic gate potential, and the state of the electrons can be tuned by adjusting these electrostatic potentials. So there is a huge impetus in trying to utilize the quantum nature of the microscopic degrees of freedom and create these states, manipulate them, and use them for various kinds of quantum information processing. But there has been one major roadblock in all these platforms, and that is the question of decoherence. This decoherence in many of these solid state systems arise due to the interactions with the other particles in the system. And this has been very difficult to get rid of. So there is this fundamental belief that most interacting quantum systems decohere and thermalize independent of their initial conditions. You may start your quantum particles in some initial state and evolve them according to the Schrodinger equation. And it was believed until recently that the collection of particles at late times will relax to an equilibrium state at finite temperature, which is essentially a classical state with no long wavelength quantum properties. But it is this assumption, exactly this assumption of thermalization of interacting quantum system, which was questioned by Anderson in this seminal paper from 1957, which was titled Absence of Diffusion in Certain Random Lattices. So he was asking this very basic question: can generic, isolated, interacting quantum systems ever fail to equilibrate? In that paper, he assumed the interactions to be zero. So he treated a system of non-interacting particles, and he discovered what is now known as Anderson localization. So here to your left is a simple model which shows Anderson localization. The first term is a random potential term which varies from one site to another and is chosen from a random probability distribution, while on the second term is a hopping term which hops the electron from one site to another. So in the absence of the hopping term, the eigenstates of the Hamiltonian are trivial. They are basically the localized orbitals on the individual sites. But what he was able to show that as you turn on tunneling, the electronic, the part wave function of the particle, it gets exponentially localized. So as you hop to a neighboring site, the amplitude of the wave function decays because of the large energy denominator. As you go further away, the amplitude decays further, and it exponentially keeps going down. But the fundamental question that he raised remains a very interesting one. Is localization stable to finite interactions? If the system, if the localized nature of the wave functions remains stable to finite interactions, then it violates the fundamental basis of thermalization. So if you start with an initial condition and evolve it in time, the particles remain localized close to their initial state, and the system never reaches thermal equilibrium. So this question is a very old question to which a few years ago I tried to study a 1D model to answer this question. So here on the slide on the top is the Hamiltonian. It's a 1D Hamiltonian of spin half particles with nearest neighbor interactions. So in the absence of disorder, the first term is a disordered magnetic field. In the absence of disorder, this is the famous Heisenberg model, which Heisenberg wrote down 100 years ago, while Hans Bethe solved it a few years later to understand essentially the magnetic properties of this material, of this model. What I found in this model is a very interesting phase diagram of this model. At t is equal to infinity, so essentially this is a statement about all the eigenstates of this Hamiltonian. At t is equal to infinity, at weak disorder, so the plot that you see is a function of a relative strength of disorder versus interaction. At weak disorder, the system thermalizes, where it satisfies the spins are able to diffuse through the system and reach thermal equilibrium. And as you increase the disorder strength, the system goes into a phase of matter which is called many-body localization. And this many-body localized phase, even though there are finite interactions, the system is not able to reach thermal equilibrium even at infinitely late times. This is a novel kind of quantum phase transition which exists, quote unquote, even at infinite temperature. At that time, there were no theory for the transition, and I came up with many conceptually new quantities in terms of which to understand this phase transition. So I discovered quantities which can probe this phase transition, showed them using entanglement entropy, various kinds of correlation functions, local observables, and matrix elements. And since then, people have gone on to study this model around the world. People have studied it to understand various properties of the many-body localized phase, and also of the phase transition from the many-body localized phase into the thermal phase. But for the purposes of this talk, I will focus on the at-large disorder strength, at disorder strengths much greater than 3.5, so deep in the localized phase. And I will try to tell you about some of the interesting features of this phase deep in the localized phase. So there is a picture of MBL in one dimension, which was proposed based on numerics. And excuse me, is there a question?
No.
Okay, sorry. Okay. I will talk about. So there is a description of many-body localization in 1D in terms of an emergent integrability. Which is known as the L-bit picture. So in the many-body localized phase, there is a complete set of quasi-local operators which commute exactly with the Hamiltonian. So there are these operators, tau iz. For each site I, there is this L-bit operator which commutes exactly with the Hamiltonian, which implies that if you evaluate the time evolution of this operator in the Heisenberg picture, the derivative of this operator is strictly equal to zero. So this operator is a conserved quantity in the localized phase. This is a very strong property of the MBL system because it allows you to characterize all the eigenstates of the system. So this local L-bit tau iz acts as a two-level system with eigenvalues plus and minus one. And now there are an extensive number of these operators. So you can basically classify all the eigenstates of the system in terms of the eigenvalues of this L-bit operator. So here is a typical eigenstate expressed as in terms of the occupation of the L-bit operator. So it's a string of pluses and minuses which represent the occupation of the relevant L-bit operator. This L-bit structure comes with also the L-bit flip operator, so tau I of X. So for each site I, there's also a quasi-local operator, which when acts on a particular eigenstate, flips the state of only one L-bit. And that takes you to another eigenstate in the system. So there is a quasi-local operator, which takes you from one localized eigenstate to the other. This is this picture, this structure of many-body localization is extremely rich. Usually, if you consider highly excited states of many-body Hamiltonians, one would require an exponentially large number of parameters in system size to classify these states. But in the many-body localized phase, the eigenstate can be represented in terms of the number of parameters, which only scales linearly with the system size. So there is a reduction of complexity in this many-body localized phase.
Is it valid everywhere, or it's only deep inside the localized phase? I mean, is it exact or approximate?
So it's a very good question. As far the proof that I cited, that proof only works deep in the localized space. So there is a piece, I've been working on this question where we have a picture of the breakdown of these L-bits as we approach this transition. So the question is it stable even close to the transition? In my work, we show that it is unlikely that it's stable. We don't have a rigorous proof in the spirit of Imrie or the system sizes for finite size numerics cannot tell us much about this L-bit structure. But my personal opinion is that these L-bits are only stable deep in the localized space. Does that answer the question or?
I just wanted to add, you seem to have a little box on your screen on the bottom right. Can you see that?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oops, sorry.
Let me also, see. If anyone else wants to ask a question, you will need to raise your voice because you can't see us, but you can hear us. Please continue.
Okay. So there's this. So if the Hamiltonian in the many-body localized phase has this L-bit structure, it was shown in this work by Giffrey, Dima in 2015 that you can write down you can approximate the unitary which diagonalizes the Hamiltonian, puts the Hamiltonian in a diagonal form in terms. Hello? Is there a question? Hello?
There's no question. It's okay.
Oh, sorry. So in this work, they showed that you can express the unitary which diagonalizes the Hamiltonian approximately in terms of a tensor network. And this unitary, all the tau z operators also commute with the Hamiltonian, these tau z operators are also related to the bare physical spins by this unitary operator. So what is this tensor network answer? So in this work, I have looked at a tensor network ansatz, which is given in this figure. So this is an ansatz which is made up of local unitary operators. So you have unitary operators UXY, which act on L contiguous spins on the lattice. In this figure, L is equal to 4. And the system is divided into such local unitary operators. So the first layer of these unitaries entangles the spins coming from the acting on, which are acted upon by this unitary operator. So it can put the spins in this block in an arbitrary state. While this ansatz has a second layer, which also has four bit unitaries, but the unitaries takes in the spins coming from two different blocks in the system. So the lower layer entangles spins, four spins coming from the lattice, and the next layer entangles spins to a larger distance, entangles spins coming from two different blocks. So this ansatz is able to capture short-range entanglement over length scales governed by the number of legs in the unitary. So the computational resources grow exponentially with the number of legs, because within this block, the unitary can be completely general, while the computational resources only scales linearly with the number of sites in the system. So this is an efficient representation of the unitary operator which diagonalizes the Hamiltonian. There was a similar answer that's proposed earlier by the group at Dresden, where they consider local unitaries acting on just two spins. So they consider local unitaries which take in two spins and can put them in some arbitrary state. And as I said, you can go to the next layer and the entanglement between the spins will propagate further. And as you increase the number of layers, the entanglement can propagate along some path on this network. So it's in the picture looks very similar to something like a deep tensor network kind of picture. So the computational resources here must grow super exponentially with the number of layers if you want to approximate the eigenstates and eigenvalues with a fixed accuracy. So in the number of layers. So in terms, in our case, the computational resource grows exponentially in the number of layers, a number of legs acted upon by the unitary, while in this multi-layer ansatz, it has to grow super exponentially to keep the accuracy fixed. It is also important to note that this method also scales linearly. This ansatz also scales linearly n, so it's efficient in terms of the full system size, but its efficiency it's slower only in this in its ability to capture local properties in the system. So let me give you a comparison between the results of this ansatz. So here on the left is our ansatz with the number of layers fixed at 2 and the number of legs extended to 4 spins. While on the right is the Dresden group's ansatz where the number of layers are taken to L4 while the number of legs is fixed at 2. And what is compared here are results from exact diagonalization. So we have diagonalized a system of size 16, fully, one can do full diagonalization, and then compared the energies from the exact diagonalization and the energies from the tensor network ansatz. So on the left here is the distribution of the difference in energies between the exact diagonalization results and the energies evaluated using this this two-layer multi-leg tensor network ansatz. And as you can see, there's a strong peak at delta E equal to 0, which shows that the eigenvalues evaluated using this ansatz is extremely accurate. While from the Dresden group's ansatz, this distribution is quite broad compared to my results. So the multi-leg ansatz shows that the multi-leg ansatz is much more accurate than the multi-layer ansatz. You will need to go to many more number of layers to get the same level of accuracy in describing the spectrum in compared to this multi-leg ansatz. To further benchmark our method, we looked at the eigenstates in the system. So one can evaluate the eigenstates from exact diagonalization and also eigenstates using this approximate method. And here is a distribution function of the overlap between the two eigenstates. As you can see, many of the eigenstates in the system have overlap close to 1. So for a 16-size system, there are lots of eigenstates, and this method gets a huge majority of eigenstates with more than 95% overlap with the exact eigenstates. So these two comparisons of the energies and the overlap of the eigenstates shows that our method works really well for small system sizes in the many-body localized phase. One can easily extend now this method because the method scales linearly in the size of the system to study larger systems. So we have looked at system sizes 80 to 100, and the method converges quite well for such large system sizes as well. So I told you one of the properties of the many-body localized phase are these L-bit operators. So here, what I'm showing you is the construction of these L-bit operators using the tensor net, using these tensor networks. Because once you have the unitary operator which diagonalizes the Hamiltonian, one can construct these L-bit operators. So what is plotted here is the logarithm of the weight of the operator as a function of position. So here is data for system size 12, and I've plotted the sum of the operators. So if you look at the red curve, it's an operator which is localized at size 6 in the system. And as you go away from the localization center, the weight of the operators on neighboring sites decays exponentially with system size. And we can use this ansatz to get both the tau x and the tau z operators, and one can see that they are exponentially localized for a single disorder realization. So this method allows us to construct these L-bit operators, which includes the tau z and the tau x operators. So these construction of these tau x and tau z operators define a qubit in an interacting system. So as I was saying earlier, the tau z operator defines a two-level system in a fully interacting setting. And these tau x operators allows you to manipulate this two-level system. This is quite a novel property, but huge, because usually when we define qubits in different settings, we try to approximate them in a very non-interacting picture. So you have one electron or two electrons, which are used to define the two-level system. In these L-bits are two-level systems where you can manipulate these two-level system to a certain approximation in a fully interacting system. So the interactions in these many-body localized systems do not affect the decoherence properties of these L-bits. So it survives even the interactions in the system. Of course, in real systems, there'll be various kinds of noise in the system. The experimentalist will not have control over all the degrees of freedom in the system. So there may be low frequency noise coming from other environmental degrees of freedom, or some sort of non-adiabatic effects. So it'll say a very interesting question about the temporal behavior of these L-bits when the system is exposed to different kinds of noise features, depending on the spectral components in the noise. So in going ahead, I would like to study dynamical properties of these L-bits when you open the system weakly to different kind of noise coming from different frequency ranges in the system. So till now, I was talking about localization in one direction, but we know that single particle localization. Yeah.
We have a question.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, those tau x tau z operators. Is there a theoretical way of constructing them outside of numerics?
I mean, most the proof by Imri is not so much a constructive proof. So you can apply the units. He shows that the unitary operators can be constructed locally, and the perturbative evaluation of the unitary operator converges. But I'm not sure if one can compose the complete set of these local operators theoretically, because it is this completeness, the feature of completeness, I think, I believe is an important feature in defining this decoherence free subspace. And that may be very difficult to nail down, I think, theoretically. It can only be made precise in a statistical sense, in the theoretical calculations, I think. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So till now, as I was saying, I have focused on the phenomena in one dimension. But we know from single particle localization that dimension can be very important for localization properties. And indeed, there are now experiments in 2D. So here are some experiments coming from Emanuel Bloch's group in Munich, where they study a two-dimensional gas of neutral atoms in a disorder potential. In that experiment, they are capable of controlling the disorder potential on each and every site in the system. And they also have the ability to image the position of the atoms as a function of time. So here on the right is the image of the atoms, where the atoms are initially prepared in an out of equilibrium state. So the atoms are all contained in one half of the cloud at time t is equal to zero, and then they evolve the system according to the interacting Hamiltonian. So this particular panel on the left are experimental measurements at disorder strength equal to zero. The system is reacting and at a high energies, and as you can see, as a function of the time, as you go lower down, the particles move around in through the entire cloud. And at some later times, they are essentially uniformly distributed entire. Then they have thermalized, and they are uniformly distributed over the entire region. In the second panel on the right, they start with the same initial condition with all the atoms in the left half of the cloud. But now the disorder, they've cranked up the disorder. As you evolve the system in time, in the presence of disorder, what they observe is a bit of freezing of the state of these atoms, where most of the atoms are restricted within the left half of the cloud. So with the help of these observations, they were able to find these two drastically different dynamical regimes, where in one case, the system spreads uniformly over the entire cloud, and in the other case, the system is remains close to the initial condition. And this was seen as a signature of many-body localization. But we should be careful, because these experiments are unable to probe the true long-time behavior in these systems. Nonetheless, they are very interesting experiments, and they have forced us theorists to think about the problem in higher dimensions much more carefully. At the same time, it has also energized the experimental community. Now there are experiments on several experimental platforms using trapped ions, superconducting qubits, NV centers, and superconducting thin films, where they are trying to study this phenomenon of many-body localization. So with this motivation in mind, I looked at the properties of MBL in dimensions greater than one. And the gist of the results are that the L-bits that are stable in one dimension are no longer stable. So here, what does that mean? So in one dimension, as I pointed out to you, the commutator of these quasi-local operators is exactly equal to zero in one dimension. And that's what gives rise to this infinite quantum memory. But in higher dimensions, our calculation suggests that these commutators can only be exponentially small in the system size of the system. To arrive at this result, we looked, we performed a Gedanken experiment. So let me describe that Gedanken experiment. So assume that the L-bit picture remains valid in higher dimensions. So you have some L-bit operators, which are defined in some region in a finite dimensional space, in a two or three dimensional space. Now, we add a small subsystem to this region of L bits, which has L bits, and couple a subsystem which can behave thermally. So it, in two dimensions, it could be the edge of the two-dimensional system, or in three dimensions, it's a surface of the two-dimensional system. So you adjust the boundary conditions in the system and ask, is it possible for the L-bit operators in the bulk to remain stable, to be, that is, to be still exactly conserved operators. And what we showed in this work is, as you turn on a weak coupling with the degrees of freedom on the boundary, the L-bits are only exponentially conserved. They are only conserved approximately over some exponentially long time scale. So this weak coupling to the boundary does not allow you to redefine your quasi-local operators, come up with new local unitaries to redefine your L-bits to conserve, to remain conserved exactly. So this picture suggests that there is a much richer description of many-body localization in higher dimensions. So we have some experimental predictions. So last fall, I was invited by the blog group to discuss some of these ideas, which they can test in their experiments. So here we have a proposal for an experiment which can check the viability of this L-star bit picture. So since they can control the disorder realization as a function of position, we propose that they create a half of the cloud where there is no disorder. So there is a region of the cloud with, where the disorder, this which is disorder-free, and the disorder only exists in the other half of the cloud. And one has to study relaxation, local relaxation, as a function of position. So if you were in the thermal region or in the disorder-free region, you will see in the experiments thermalization of the local degrees of freedom, the local patch of atoms, over some order one time scale, which is independent of the position of the patch. So you can do the experiments in different patch and study the relaxation property, and those time scales will not change. But if you do the same experiment and study the local relaxation in the disordered region, this L star bit picture suggests that the local relaxation time now will scale with the position of the patch. More precisely, the time for relaxation will grow exponentially with the distance from the edge of the disorder-free region. And this spatial dependence of the relaxation times are quite plausible to be experimentally measurable in the near future. They may have to go to larger system sizes and be able to study longer time scales, but it seems quite reasonable that in the near future, these experiments will be able to study these properties and be able to verify the picture I have proposed in terms of L star bits. And this, I would also want to theoretically continue working on the question of localization in higher dimensions. The theoretical calculation was based on Fermi's golden rule, but one can possibly do more sophisticated calculations where one can calculate the distribution of the relaxation times in different scenarios, which the experimentalist may have more direct access to. And that may give a more concrete comparison between the L-star bit picture and the experiments that have been performed. So I intend to continue working on this problem of higher dimensions in the near future. With that, I would now try to outline some of the future goals that I plan to undertake in the next few years. So I told you about different experimental platforms. There are now NV centers, trapped ions, and various semiconductor systems, which can study localization in these different solid state settings. But all these systems have long range interactions. So what is the effect of long range interactions on many body localization? There is this work that I have done looking at infinite range models. So these are models, these are class of infinite range models where spins arbitrarily far away are able to interact with each other. And we have shown in these pieces of work that even these infinite range models can avoid thermalization because of frustration effects. But they don't have L-bits like in the case of one dimensions with short range interactions. So here are possible phase diagrams of this system. So if you look at the one on the left, what is plotted here, it's a schematic picture. On the y-axis, the temperature. On the x-axis is the range of interaction. What this piece of work says, it suggests that even at infinite range interaction, you know, when the interactions are infinite range, there is a non-thermal phase without any L-bits. And from other works, short-range models, I have shown that there is localization, many-body localization, even for short-range models. So on the left of this phase diagram. Now, the question is, how do these two different forms of non-thermalizing behavior connect each other? Is there a phase transition from this non-thermal behavior without L-bits to the MPL phase? Or is there an intermediate thermal phase where you go from the non-thermal behavior for infinite range models into the thermal phase and then the L-bit picture emerges? Then these two non-thermalizing behaviors are of very different, have very different properties in that sense. Or is it a crossover? Are they essentially the same system where the L-bit picture is only valid in some limited sense, and what is essentially true is more close to the infinite range models? So these experiments, which are affected by long-range interactions, I think these kinds of properties to study thermalization and various kinds of non-thermalizing behavior in long-range models will be a very interesting direction to follow in the near future, where experiments and theory can collaborate very closely, in my view. Then there is also the question about the nature of this fundamental quantum phase transition. At the moment, there are no theories for this phase transition. Here, what I've shown is a schematic picture of a possible feature of the state at the critical point. So one may have localized regions which are act thermally, they are highly entangled in different points in space, but one can have longer range entanglement, which is of a different, which is at a different scale, and that long range entanglement is sort of weaker than the thermal entanglement between the local degrees of freedom. So one may require to describe multi-scale properties of entanglement to be able to capture this interesting phase transition between a phase which is volume law entangled and thermal, and a phase which is area law entangled. this may require borrowing ideas from quantum information theory, like concepts of multipartite entanglement, maybe, or ideas of maybe entanglement monogamy, which may be important in distinguishing the properties of the critical point from the two phases on either side. This is possibly a long-term project with very deep theoretical implications, which I hope to embark upon in the next few years. And then I try to argue that the many-body localization can be a resource for quantum computation because there is this notion of local quantum memory. So what is, how can it be useful for quantum computation? So we know that there are various proposals to use edge modes in ground states of one-dimensional topological systems to create a topological qubit. And but realizing them in experiments and manipulating them has been quite challenging, and largely because these were understood only as properties of the ground states of the system. In this work with the group at Princeton, I've shown that topological order can even exist in highly excited states where these topological edge modes are protected in highly excited eigenstates. That naturally raises the question, is it possible to manipulate the quantum information which is stored in the edge modes in this excited state? So you can imagine having two such qubits, and to what extent can one entangle these two qubits, and does the many-body localized nature of these qubits give us some resource or speed up for manipulating quantum information? So these questions are quite relevant from experimental and theoretical point of views, and it brings together various ideas from different fields in theoretical physics. So this is a figure, the way I visualize how many-body localization and the question of quantum normalization fits in these larger set of ideas. So you see synergies between quantum information, theoretically, because many-body localization and thermalization is fundamentally about entanglement in these systems. There's obviously also connections to universality in out-of-equilibrium systems. What kind of phase transitions can you drive when the system is out of equilibrium? And then there's also the possibility to develop novel numerical techniques based on entanglement. So theoretically, many-body localization sits quite, has the ability to exchange, there's a possibility of exchange of ideas between different kinds of theoretical pictures. And at the same time, we have seen that this problem has come into the limelight because of experiments. Now there are experiments in trapped ions, cold atoms, and quantum optics, and decenters and semiconductors. So there's a rich experimental playground for these ideas. And going forward, I see that by asking questions about the many-body localization, one can still generate ideas which can go back and forth between these different scientific disciplines. And I can see at Perimeter, IQC, and Waterloo, there are many theorists, Giffrey, Roger, clearly I've been thinking about many of these questions in great detail, and then there are different community involving people studying quantum error correcting codes. So I see really benefiting a lot from the exchange of ideas from the larger community in Waterloo, and also experimentally. There are now experimental groups of Rajibul Islam and Crystal Senko studying the trapped ions and cold atoms, which will be accessing these physics. And also, so I can see a very vibrant intellectual atmosphere developing in Waterloo in the near future, which will be very appropriate for attacking these sets of challenging questions in physics. With that, I would like to thank my collaborators. I have had the privilege to work with collaborators from several different universities. Today, I talked about my work with the group at Oxford and also groups at Boston University and ICTP. I also talked about work done at Princeton. And also, over the past few years, I've really enjoyed mentoring graduate students who are sort of beginning to work on many-body localization in different universities. And it has been quite an interesting experience mentoring these graduate students. I would also like to thank my collaborators on the other topics, which have informed my perspective on the set of questions that I have worked on and will continue working on in the future. With that, let me summarize. I have given you an efficient representation of MBL systems using tensor networks. I've shown you how that the explicit construction of these L-bits in interacting disordered systems. I have argued that in dimensions greater than one, the L-bit picture is unstable, and it gives rise to a new phenomenology of MBL in higher dimensions, given in terms of L star bits. And these have real connections to cold atom experiments being currently performed in labs around the world. And I've also tried to give you a larger perspective of the kinds of questions which are relevant for many-body localization and other relevant fields. With that, I would like to thank you for your attention.
Arjun, can you see us?
Yeah.
Can you see us now?
Yeah.
Very good. So I wanted to ask you a couple of questions, but Roger, something, do you want to ask questions?
So you mentioned the difference between 1D and higher D, and if I understood correctly, you said that in dimension greater than one, there's no strictly conserved local integrable of motion. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So what's the I didn't understand what the fundamental difference is between 1D and higher D. Can you explain it a little bit?
So I went through it a bit too quickly. So in one dimension, so the picture that I showed you the case where these L star bits will be feasible is when you perturb the boundary of the system. So in 1D, if you perturb the boundary, that's essentially a Hilbert space which doesn't scale with the system size. So the Hilbert space of the boundary is an order one number. So if you perturb things on the boundary, the effect doesn't propagate deep into the bulk. So you are able to renormalize. So if you have an L bit in the bulk in one dimension, you can easily renormalize your unitary operators to define new unitary operators. And find new operators which remain conserved with the Hamiltonian. In higher dimensions, the boundary is essentially a Hilbert space which scales with the system size. So even though it's in the thermodynamic limit, the boundary should have no effect on the system. But for a finite system, the boundary is something which scales with the system size. So you can have a boundary which is thermalizing, but as you take the thermodynamic limit, this boundary goes far away. But for any finite size system, this boundary, the levels on the boundary, there are exponentially many levels on the boundary now. Instead of in 1D, where the boundary only has an order one number of levels. So these exponential number of levels, if you have weak coupling, even a slightly small coupling to these so thermal states on the boundary, because of the exponentially large Hilbert space on the boundary which thermalizes, there is no way to redefine your L-bit operators and keep them exactly conserved. So it's the higher dimensions is really there are these smaller dimensional objects in higher D which can destabilize these L-bit operators. So that's the picture.
So is this statement strictly for finite systems or?
Yeah, so this statement, so integrals of motion are usually defined in finite size systems. The statement about integrability of MBL in 1D is about a finite Hamiltonian. That's what even in integrable models, clean integrable models, one can define operators which commute exactly with the Hamiltonian at finite size. The definition of integrability is for a finite size system. So this L star bit scenario is also for a finite size system. But the point being that since this relaxation times diverges exponentially with the system size, it depends on the dynamic quantities that you calculate and how you take the order of limits. If you were to take time going to infinity first, and then the system size going to infinity, then the system will thermalize in higher dimensions, according to our picture. But dynamic quantities like conductivity, one takes the thermodynamic limit first, L going to infinity first, and then frequency going to zero. And that's what defines dynamic properties. And in that limit, when L goes to infinity and then frequency goes to zero, the system is still many body localized in the sense it has zero conductivity.
Okay, so if I imagine taking the thermodynamic limit, so as system size increases, as you said, the size of the Hilbert space for the boundary with freedom grows exponentially, but at the same time,
yeah.
I guess the effect of the boundary with freedom to bulk with freedom decays exponentially.
Yes.
So it seems to me that there is some competition, and maybe in some cases the effect of the boundary actually can be negligible. Maybe I'm wrong, but.
Yeah, no, so that's actually, if you take the thermodynamic limit, the effect of the boundary becomes negligible in the thermodynamic limit. That's exactly the point. That
even
as you take the Yeah.
Even in higher dimensions.
Even in higher dimensions. That's essentially the crux of the picture that we propose. That as you take the infinite size limit, the boundary stops being important for degrees in the bulk, which is, so it's still many body localized, but there are no exactly conserved integrals of motion. Does it, you seem,
Yeah, I think that these two statements seem contradictory to me, so maybe, so you said there are still many body localization in the thermodynamic limit?
Yeah.
But you're saying you cannot find exact integrable motion even in the thermodynamic limit, is that?
Well, you can't define integrals of motion for an infinite system, in the sense.
But,
I mean it,
but as we take the large system, can you progressively update your definition of integral motion such that it becomes well defined in the thermodynamic limit?
Well, that's an interesting question. I haven't thought of that. No, it's maybe that's an interesting point. It may be possible that one can come up with a procedure to construct these similar to Imbri, where it becomes asymptotically exact. So his proof will need to be modified to talk about this asymptotic exactness of the integrals of motion. And I haven't. No, it's possible. It's possible. That's an interesting point.
Yeah, but then what was your statement about the difference between 2D and 1D?
So the 2D in 1D, if you perturb things on the boundary, nothing happens to the integers.
That's for the finite system.
Yeah, even for the finite system.
Okay. Yeah, so maybe one more question. So in the later part, you mentioned the possibility that when there are long-range interactions, you can have many, very localized phase, but you don't have integrable motion. By that, do you mean there's no local integrable motion, or can you?
So in these infinite range models, what happens is in the many body localized phase, the one description is in terms of spectrum of local observables. So if you, in the localized phase, many body localized phase in this L-bit sense, if you flip a single spin, you couple to only a discrete number of levels. So there's the gap in the local spectrum of an operator in the many body localized phase. In these infinite range models, if you flip one spin, because of the infinite rangeness, the local spectrum is no longer gapped. But there is still, you cannot excite all the possible states that you require to reach thermal equilibrium. So you break the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis, because the eigenstates, even though the local spectrum is no longer discrete, there is some large number of states which you can couple to, but the large number of states are not still large enough for the system to thermalize. So I don't know if there is a picture in terms of local. It'll have to be much more subtle, I think, because you get these huddles of states which talk to each other, but then the picture is that you have different puddles which are unable to talk to each other, because these puddles get essentially screened because of the high energy barriers in these. So there is an aspect of glassiness which appears in these infinite range.
Yeah, models. Maybe my confusion is that usually when we say thermalization, we define it to be the case where for local observable, the memory of the initial state is lost, right?
Yeah.
But when there's no locality in your Hamiltonian in the beginning, how would you define the notion of thermalization and therefore many body localization?
So we use this picture from the Fox space picture of BAA. So there we ask, you start with some initial configuration and you perform the perturbation theory, many-body perturbation theory on this Fox space and ask what are the configurations you can connect to. And in the once we do the perturbation on the Fox space, it's about finding a resonant path through the Fox space. And it is in this sense the system remains localized, that you can't couple to a large, even though you couple to a large number of states nearby in Fox space, but you cannot couple to something far apart, far in Fox space. So there, because you lose the sense of locality, one has to go to this picture of localization in Fox space.
Even when there are many states with the same energy.
Yeah. They are not. There are many states which are far away. What we showed in this work that even if there are states which are far away in terms of Hamming distance, but they are at the same energy, these two, the system is not able to tunnel to those states.
Okay.
So it smells a lot of glassiness in the infinite range models. So that's why I resisted from defining glassiness bit that will take us into another different direction. But that's why that picture of the breakdown of thermalization is closer to glassiness. Question is, now the question is, does glassiness actually continue to many body localization, or the breakdown of thermalization in glassy systems fundamentally different from many body localization?
Okay, thank you.
So maybe just a quick follow-up on that. So one of your proposed phase diagrams had a boundary between that, you know, glassy phase or that infinite range localized phase and your regular MBL. So what's the signature of that transition that you would look for? Or just to distinguish it from a crossover?
So it's, so that one of the signatures will be this local spectrum. So is the so the local spectrum is scales. There are exponentially many levels in the local spectrum of the operator in the glassy phase, while in the thermal phase, the local spectrum is gapped. So and in the thermal phase, the local spectrum is continuous.
So individual eigenstates still have area law on both sides of that proposed transition.
So I don't know in this glassy picture what the entanglement entropy would be. We haven't, in the infinite range case, we can't define an entanglement entropy. But there may be some sort of other entropy on Fock space that one can define. But not in terms of entanglement entropy, I don't think. At least in this infinite range limit. One can go to a large, long-range interactions. The question is, when do we stop being local if you take a sort of Coulomb power law interaction? When does sort of locality break down from this picture? And I don't know if entanglement entropy, I don't know if entanglement entropy will be able to capture that.
I think I'll just ask you one question. So it refers to the multi-layer tensor network algorithm that you described. So you mentioned that it scales linearly in the system size. And I wonder what it is that you can use it for. So now you can use your algorithm to go to larger systems?
Yes.
But what can you learn that you couldn't learn with smaller systems?
I mean, if you want to calculate dynamics in larger systems, that is one of the things. The thing what we want to also study is the structure of resonances, so it's long distance resonances. So if you flip, if you can go to larger distance, well, as you approach the transition, as you go to lower disorder, the multi-leg ansatz works quite well, even close to the transition. I didn't show those results.
But you haven't mentioned that. So you're saying that this algorithm also works quite well near the transition?
It works quite well near the transition.
That was my question. So what happens? How does it scale as the localization length diverges?
So we don't have such a large dynamic range in L, so number of legs. So we go to 8 legs, 2, 4, 8. It's some power law. It looks like it's like a power law, but it's one would have to take that with a pinch of salt, I would say. But I think what may be feasible to study is the distribution of these resonances that proliferate as we approach the transition. Those may be more accessible using this ansatz. They are sort of by studying the matrix element. So if you flip, once you get the eigenstates with some accuracy close to the transition, you ask if you flip some spin with how many other spins do you resonate with? And that information may exist. I expect them to exist in the larger system size ansatz evaluation. So that I think because it works close to the transition, my belief is that one may be able to bootstrap the method to describe, to go even closer to the transition, some sort of tree-like structure, maybe. I mean, you solve the system, evaluate the effective Hamiltonian. The unitaries are like a renormalization group. You calculate the new states, which are more or less resonant, and then calculate the effective Hamiltonian from the unitary on some scale, and then solve. So doing a sort of RG in the number of layers. I mean, these are all very vague ideas at the moment, but that I think this ansatz may allow us to go in that direction.
Okay, thank you. Are there more questions? All right, so we're going to leave it there then.
Okay.
I'll be in touch shortly. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Bye. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.